जय ओम विष्णु पाद परमहंस परिव्राज गचार्य शुतुर शतु श्री श्रीमान इजवाइन ग्रे श्रील प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथराज श्रीमान भागवतम की गौर प्रमनंदी All glories to the Simula Bodhis. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gaura. Om Aknaranta Mirandasya Naranjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manabhi Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Adati Swabadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyarevacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarha Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया Since Canto Chapter 2, Verse Number 7 अयाम हि कृत निर्वेशो जन्म कोत्यम हि याभ्याचहार विवशो नाम स्वस्तय नाम हरि अयाम हि कृत निर्वेशो जन्म कोत्यः सम अपि यद् व्याजहार विवशो नमः स्वस्तय नाम हरे निर्वेशो जन्म कोत्यः सम अपि Yad vyaja hara vivasho nama swastaya nam hare nirvesho janma kotyaha samapi Yad vyaja hara vivasho nama swastaya nam hare words were meaning ayam, this person Ajamila, he krita nirvesha has undergone all kinds of atonement, janma of births, koti of millions, hasam for the sinful activities, api. Even, yet, because Vyajahara, he has chanted Visha in a helpless condition, Nama, the holy name, Swasti Ayanam, the means of liberation, Hari, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Translation. Ajamil had already atoned for all his sinful actions. Indeed, He has atoned not only for sins performed in one life, but for those performed in millions of lives. For in a helpless condition, he chanted the holy name of Narayana. Even though he did not chant purely, he chanted without offense, and therefore he is now pure and eligible for liberation. Purport. The Yamadutas had the external situation of Ajamila. Extremely sinful throughout his life, they thought he should be taken to Yamaraj and did not know that he had become free from the reactions of all his sins. The Vishnudutas therefore instructed that because he had chanted the four syllables of the name, Narayana, at the time of his death, he was freed from all sinful reactions. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following verses from the Smriti Shastra. Namno hi yavati shakti papa niharane hari tavat karutum na shaknoti patakam patiki naraha. Quote, simply by chanting one holy name of Hari, a sinful man can counteract the reactions to more sins than he is able to commit. That's from the Briha Vishnu Purana. Avishenapi yanamni kirtite sarvapatkai puman vimuchete sadya simhatrashtair megair iva. Quote, if one chants the holy name of the Lord, even in a helpless condition or without desiring to life depart, just as when a lion roars, all the small animals flee in fear. End quote, that's from the Garuda Purana. Sakrit ucharitam yena herer ityakshara dvayam badha parikarastena mokshaya gamanam prati. Quote, by one chanting the holy name of the Lord, which consists of the two syllables ha di, one guarantees his path to liberation. End quote, that's from the Skanda Purana. These are why the Vishnudutas objected to the Yamadutas taking Ajamil to the court of Yamaraj. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So I'm going to read on. The point here is obvious. The first set of verses, 1 through 6, the Vishnudutas reproached the Yamadutas and indirectly reproached Yamaraj for improper administering of justice and saying this is not good for leaders. They should know everything. They should know the principles governing material life, dharma, and they should also be aware of transcendental principles. We had brought out that point yesterday, how the leaders should be seeing everyone equally, which means they have a transcendental vision. If you're going to be seeing everyone equally, that means you have to see beyond the material body. All living entities in your kingdom, see them equally. Not, oh, he is an animal, so he's less and more important. And so the leadership has to be materially edified and spiritually edified. Just like to be a term president, in one sense you should be materially edified, how to manage a material situation, spiritually edified. So the Yamadutas, they understood material principles, which they delineated very nicely, but they didn't understand spiritual principles. And so the Vishnudutas are finding fault with them. And now they're about to extend transcendental principles, the semblance of the holy name, and the next set of verses from verse number 7 to verse 19. From verse number 7 to verse 19, the holy name of Krishna is being glorified by glorifying a semblance of the holy name of Krishna. Understand? There's Nama, and then there's Namabhas, the name, and then the semblance of the name. So in order to glorify the position of the name, the position of the semblance of the name is being glorified in this pastime of Ajamila. This is called Kaimutya Naya, the logic of how much more so. If you can get this by this, how much more so that? So if you can get all these benefits by chanting the semblance of the name, how much more so by chanting the name proper, the pure holy name of Krishna? Glorification of Shudanam through the glorification of Namabhas. This is called Kaimutya Naya. So that's what we're going to hear in the next set of verses from the Vishnudutas, the glorification of course, transcendental principles, the glorification of bhakti, the glorification of relationship with Krishna, particularly through the glorification of Namabhas, the holy name of Krishna, even chanted in a semblance form. And this particular verse is just being pointed out. Prabhupada points out here in the purport, the Yamadutas had considered only the external situation of Ajna. So this is the point. You see things materially, but there's the phenomenal, which we can see, and there's the numinous, which we can't see. And to come to proper conclusions about things in life, especially for leadership, you should understand both principles of the phenomenal and the numinous. So the Yamadutas can understand the phenomenal, the modes of nature, but they didn't see that by Ajamil's chanting the holy name of Krishna. So it's saying here, Krita Nirvesho, by Krishna, he has atoned for all kinds of atonement. Jama Kotyam Hasam. He's atoned for millions of sinful activities, more than he's even able to commit in one lifetime, just by chanting the holy name of Krishna. Such is the power of the semblance of the name. What to speak of chanting the holy name purely? Just chanting the semblance has so much power. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he just quotes several verses demonstrating the power of the holy name of Krishna. And so this, in Prabhupada concludes the purport, these are some of the reasons why the Vishnudutas objected to the Yamadutas taking Ajamil in the court of Yamaraj. So that's this point. Are there any questions about anything? Was that every pretty clear? Obvious. We're going to get into, I'm going to read something else for you today from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It's a 10-page commentary on some interesting things we'll hear today. So I'm going to move on to at least a few more verses here, and then we'll read. So I hope you have your listening ears on, because I know that's a rarity. But we're going to go through this 10-page purport together. So next verse. Ete naiva hyagonosya yagonosya kritam syad aganish kritam yadha narayanayeti jagadha chaturaksharam. Translation. The Vishnudutas continued, even previously while eating and at other times, this Ajamila will call his son, saying, "My dear Narayana, please come here." Although calling the name of his son, he nevertheless uttered the four syllables Narayana. Simply by chanting the name of Narayana in this way, he sufficiently atoned for the sinful reactions of millions of lives. Purport, previously when engaged in sinful activities to maintain his family, Ajamila chanted the name of Narayana without offenses. So it's possible to be engaged in sinful activities and be an offenseless chanter, but you shouldn't know anything about Hare Krishna. Otherwise, you would probably inevitably commit this offense. To chant the holy name of the Lord just to counteract one's sinful activities, or to commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting the holy name, is offensive. Namno bhala yasehi papa bhuti. But although Ajamil engaged in sinful activities, he never chanted the holy name of Narayana to counteract them. He simply chanted the name Narayana to call his son. Therefore, his chanting was effective. Because of chanting the holy name of Narayana in this way, he had already vanquished the accumulated sinful reactions of many, many lives. In the beginning, he was pure. But although he later committed many sinful acts, he did not chant the holy name of Narayana to counteract them. That's an important sentence. I think it'll be brought out when I read the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. One who always chants the holy name of the Lord without offense is always pure. This verse, Ajamila was already sinless, and because he chanted the name of Narayana, he remained sinless. It did not matter that he was calling his son. The name itself was effective. And now the reason why it is so is in the next verse, although it doesn't have any purport. Here, the main point is that although Ajamil was performing sinful activities, he wasn't chanting the name of the Lord to counteract them. Nor was he performing sinful activities on the strength of chanting, thinking that let me have some of this alcohol right now, and I'll just chant Hare Krishna and be purified. So this is fantastic, you know, the have my cake and eat it too philosophy. This is the saying in America, have my cake and eat it too, or have my feet in two boats at the same time, one in the material side, one in the spiritual side, and go nicely along the way. He wasn't thinking like that, and therefore he committed no offense when he was chanting. He was just chanting because he was attached to his son, so he was constantly chanting the name of Narayana. And that way, his practice was pure, in that sense. His practice was actually pure because it was devoid of offenses to the holy name of Krishna. so that's the first point being mentioned here. And then another point here is, in the beginning he was pure, so that this will be brought out later on, I think. In the beginning he was pure, meaning qualities from the Yamadutas and so on in chapter 1. But although he later committed many sinful acts by which he destroyed his purity, it means his purity, that was destroyed by sinful acts, he was offenseless because he did not chant the holy name of Narayana to counteract them. So although his piety was destroyed by his sinful activity, when he began to chant the holy name of Krishna, he began to develop another type of purity, the type of purity that comes from engagement in devotional service of Krishna. So this is an important point to know. I want to read something for you to bring out this point. So in the beginning, he had a pious life of purity, you know, like sattva-gun, and then that was destroyed by his sinful engagement. And then after that, when he started taking up the chanting of the holy name of Krishna, he developed another type of devotional purity, the purity that comes from chanting the holy name. Yeah, so we're going to get into the... How did that actually happen? Because such is the power of the holy name. This is, again, the application of the holy name of Krishna, that because it is a little confusing, so we're going to discuss that. Because then Prabhupada says here, one who always chants the holy name of the Lord without offenses is always pure. So it's interesting. Even though it was seen that he was continuing some sinful activities, even after he took up chanting the holy name of Narayana out of affection for his son, still Prabhupada says, one who always chants the holy name of the Lord without offenses is always pure. And he wasn't chanting offensively, although engaged in sinful activities. At least apparently so. So this is a little unique. this should impact to some degree the way we evaluate devotees. this understanding should help us to see that we have to be very careful in our evaluation of devotees, which can lead to us committing offense to them, even though they may actually be offenseless, even though by circumstances there may be some engagement in sinful activities. As confirmed in this verse, Ajamil was already sinless, and because he had the name of Narayana, he remained sinless, even though it was seen that he was engaged in sinful activities. It did not matter that he was calling his son, the name itself was effective. So why was the name itself effective? So I'm going to read the next two verses. We actually don't have a purport to them, but we'll chant them anyway for purification. This is verses 9, 10. Please repeat. Stena sura pomitra drug brahmaha shtri raja pitra gohanta yecha patakino pare sarvesham apyaghavatam idam eva sunishkritam Nama vyaharanam vishnur yatastha vishayamati. Ta vishayamati. That's an important phrase there. Translation: the chanting of the holy name of Lord Vishnu is the best process of atonement for a thief of gold or other valuables, for a drunkard, for one who betrays a friend or relative, from one who kills a brahmana, or from one who indulges in sex with the wife of his guru or another superior. It is also the best method of atonement for one who murders women, the king or his father, for one who slaughters cows, and for all other sinful men. Simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Vishnu, such sinful persons may attract the attention of the Supreme Lord, who therefore considers, because this man has chanted my holy name, my duty is to give him protection. So someone comes up and says, I just killed... So don't worry about it, just chant Hare Krishna. Of course, the police here were thinking like that. We may get arrested. They're encouraging all sorts of simple, very simple activities and saying it's not a problem, just chant Hare Krishna, it'll all be okay. There's a reason for that. The reason, and the phrase is tavishayamati, that the Lord's mind thinks of that devotee who chants his name. So this is a very important point. Anyone who chants the name of Lord Narayana, the Lord's mind thinks of that person. And there's a reason for this, and this is something that's very interesting. Just as a devotee has attachment to the name of Krishna, the named, Krishna also has fondness for his name because of his attachment to his devotee. Isn't that interesting? It's fascinating. I just was reading this morning, Jiva Goswami commentary. This is the devotee has fondness for the name of Krishna because of his attachment to Krishna. Krishna also has fondness for his name because of his attachment to his bhakta, his devotee. So it's not narcissism when Krishna has attraction to his name. It's not like, what a narcissistic person. Some people think like that. Just like we may have attraction to our name because we're arrogant, and everyone should, not because it's the name of God for someone else who initiated, but because it's my name. But Krishna has fondness for his name because of the attraction to his devotee. Because what is the name of Krishna? There, as we learn from the Harinam Chintamani, there are primary names and secondary names. Understand? Primary names and secondary names. So the primary names, well, let's say the secondary names, are the names of Krishna that refer to his relationship with the material world, such as Ishwara, Jagatguru is a name, Paramatma, etc., Jagat Bandhu, etc. These are all names called, these are called secondary names of the Lord, which relate to his, which are names which relate to the material creation. Those types of names have the power to, of course, give one prema. They do have power to purify you, of course, because they're names of God, but they cannot give you prema. But then Krishna, okay, Krishna has his primary names. His primary names are names that are in relationship to his leelas and his devotees in the spiritual world, like Jasoda Nandana, Nandanandana, Brijendra Nandana, etc. These are all names which speak of Krishna's relationship with his associates and the spiritual world performing leela. Those types of names have the power to not only purify, which is a secondary effect of chanting those names, but they have the power to give you prema, which is the primary benefit of chanting the names of Krishna. You want to just I answered the question. Okay. Yeah. So we're getting to that point. So why is it that Krishna has fondness for his name? Because it seems somewhat, I mean, it's not weird, but it's an interesting point. That just as a devotee has fondness for the name of Krishna because of his attachment to God, God has fondness for his name also because of his attachment to the devotee. Primary name of Krishna, what is that name? That name is that which is coming out of the heart of a devotee who's invested with pure prema for Krishna. That is the real name of Krishna. In other words, Krishna, an entity is invested with the Swarup Shakti of Krishna, prema. He's invested with that prema. And that which is coming out of their mouth is a manifestation of their love. And that manifestation of their love is that name of Krishna. And that particular name of Krishna is Nidra, all the potencies invested with it. Just as we discussed this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam 3.9.11, the form of Krishna that appears before a devotee is a form of Krishna that is in reciprocation of that devotee's bhava. So in one sense, the form of Krishna is a manifestation of the bhava of his devotee. And because just as Krishna is eternal, so also there are the Nitya Mukta living entities who are eternally existing along with Krishna in the spiritual world performing leela. And so the forms, the reason there are so many variety of forms of Godhead, this is described in the Brihadaranyaka very nicely. The reason there are so many forms of Godhead is because there are so many devotees invested with these unique types of bhava for Krishna. And the form that is manifesting is a reflection of that particular bhava. Does that make sense? So the form of Godhead is an exact replica, you could say, or yeah, reflection, I think, is a better word, of the bhava of his devotee. Understand? The example given, like you may see the sun in the sky. Let's say different types of persons are looking at the sun in the sky, and they're looking at that one sun from different vantage points. Understand? So according to the vantage point they're looking at the sun, that sun may have a different backdrop behind it. So from if you look at it from the north, it may have the city skyline in the backdrop. If you look at it from the south, that's the backdrop. If you look at it from the east, it may have the ocean as the backdrop. So depending on the vantage point in which you look at the sun is differently perceived. Does it make sense? Differently perceived. So similarly, the form of, it's only one Godhead, there's only one God, but according to the background of a devotee's bhava, that same one Godhead is perceived differently. Does it make sense? So according to a devotee's bhava, which is the backdrop for the one son that is Krishna, then the form of Krishna is manifesting as Kapila Dev, as Matsya, as Nrsimha, as Kurma, as Krishna. You know, so the variety of forms, so the point, the variety of forms are direct reflections of, if you will, I don't know if that's exactly the proper language, that's the one I'm using now, are direct reflection of the devotee's bhava for Krishna. Understand that point? So the name that's coming out of the devotee's mouth is a name that is coming from his bhava. So therefore, because Krishna has attachment to those who love him, because the name that's coming out of their mouth is a name that is infused with their particular love for him, so Krishna also has fondness for his name, which reminds him of his devotee. This is a name reminds the devotee of Krishna. Krishna's name reminds Krishna of his devotee. Right, does it make sense? Can you understand? So you call him Jasoda Nandana. Krishna thinks of Jasoda. And the devotee thinks of Krishna, who is the son of Mother Jasoda. Right? But Krishna thinks of Mother Jasoda. And that way, Krishna also has fondness for his names. So anyone who chants his names, Krishna's mind thinks of that person because it reminds him not just of that person who's chanting his name, but of his dear devotees and who he shares these eternal loving relationships. And therefore, he becomes pleased with that individual. It's just like if you had a nickname that only someone who loved you called you, mostly called you, and some third party refers to you by that nickname, then immediately you're remembering that beloved or that person who loves you in that way, and you also appreciate that third party because he's referred to you in that affectionate sort of way, and causing you to be grateful towards him. And also causing you to think of that devotee in whom refers to you in an affectionate sort of way. Does it make sense? So here it says in 9:10, it's mentioning this point that anyone who, simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Vishnu, such sinful persons may attract the attention of the Supreme Lord, who therefore considers, because this man is chanting my holy name, my duty is to give him protection. So because he's referred to me in this affectionate way, a way that is usually only referred to a way in which I'm referred only by those who have this sort of affection for me, he feels gratitude for that individual who chants his name. Especially in the case of Ajamil, it was chanted with affection. Not affection for Krishna, his son, but that affection for his son became infused with the syllables of the name. And so Krishna appreciated it, and therefore thought of Ajamil when he chanted his name. So not only did he become free from sins, which is an insignificant result of chanting the name of Krishna, especially a primary name like Narayana, that he got from the first time he chanted the name of Narayana. But after that, his continuous chanting of the name of Narayana, he developed bhakti for Krishna, even though his consciousness wasn't fixed on Krishna, such is the power of the semblance of the name. So we're going to get into that in more detail now. You want to say something? Yes, that's what I'm saying, that even, because Baba wasn't emanating from Ajamil's heart either, but yet his mind thought of him, saying here, I must give him protection, that he has gratitude for that individual. Just like Krishna says to, who is that? Durvas Muni, Aham Bhakta Paradhino, Hyaswantantra Ivadvija, that I am Bhakta Paradhina, I am under the control of my devotee, Bhakta Paradhina. I am under the control of my devotee. He's under the control of his devotee's bhava. And he has satantra ivadvija. I have no independence. What does all this talk about me being independent? Because the Rasa Muni had come to him seeking shelter from his chakra. And, you know, the Rasa Muni went to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma said, you're finished. He went to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva said, you're finished. He went to Lord Narayana, Lord Narayana said, So Durvasa Muni said, this is your chakra only, you know, you can stop it. And he said, what is this? I'm independent. You know, he said, you are the independent Supreme Lord. And Lord Narayana said, what is all this talk about me being independent? Yasatantra Ivaduja, I am not at all independent. What is this talk? I am a Bhakta Paradina, I'm under the control of my devotee. Sadhu Grasta Hridaya, Sadhu, what is that? Grasta Hridaya, something like that. I haven't quoted this verse in like, you know, 7 years or something, but it's. Anyway, Sadhu Grasta Hridaya, because my devotee's heart is completely devoid of desires and so on. What to speak of my Bhakta? Those who are servants of my bhakta, I am feeling obliged to them also. Such as attachment to his bhakta. So when a person chants the name of Krishna, it reminds him of his bhakta, and so he also becomes obliged to that individual. Tavichayamati, this verse is saying, his mind thinks of that person also, because he's reminding him of his beloved. So anyway, it's just like if you are attached to your beloved in a very intense sort of way, like in the first 2 weeks of a new relationship, you know, after the 2 weeks or get over, the romance goes away and then everything starts to go downhill from there. when you're attached to your beloved, sorry, something mundane came to my mind, but I have to share it because it demonstrates something about the material world that I thought was funny. I saw a commercial one time. It was a trailer for a movie. And in the movie, it was about an old couple. The old couple was saying, one of the men in the relationship, he was saying, people don't change. He was saying like that, people don't change. And then his wife said, yes, they do. They get worse. I thought that was funny. Because that's actually a principle in the material world. One of the principles of material existence is decay. So also, along with that, not only is there decay of the body, but there's also relationships. Anyway, so in the first 2 weeks of the relationship, there's like the heat of the romance and everything. So anyone who reminds you of your beloved in that time, you feel very much like that person also. They speak of your beloved in a pleasing sort of way and so on. Then you like that individual also. So similarly, someone chants the name of Narayana, and he has fondness for his name because it reminds him of his devotee. So Krishna likes that individual also. His mind thinks of him. Tavishayamati, that's what it's saying. His mind thinks of that individual. Such is the power of chanting the name of Krishna even without indicating Krishna. Such is the beauty of the name. So Namabhas, this is Namabhas chanting. So this is a glory. So what to speak of with service? If chanting like this, by accident, gives so much of benefit of chanting with affection for the Lord. So now we're going to read, I don't even think I'll finish, this purport is long, 10-page purport for verses 9 and 10 by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. I was thinking I could sum it up, but I thought maybe we could just go through it together. It's not easy to understand all the points. Some other just background things of Krishna and the semblance of the name of Krishna. Another point, we already talked about primary, secondary names. Another point, as brought out by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is the name, Namabhas, the semblance of the name, is the name of Krishna covered by ignorance and anarthas. Understand? The name of Krishna covered by ignorance and anarthas in our heart is called as Namabhas. Understand? Actually, it doesn't cover the name of Krishna, but it covers our ability to experience the name of Krishna. Just like if the sun was covered by clouds, and then you would not be able to see the sun so much. There may be some sunshine so that you know that it's daytime, but you don't get the full heat of the sun. So similarly, because our hearts are clouded by anarthas, and there's also a very thick mist of ignorance, this is the language used by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Harinam Chintamani, so we get the sunshine effect of the sun of Krishna's name, but we don't experience the full potency of the name because of ignorance and anarthas. Understand? Ignorance has, yeah. He's there, he's present, just as the sun is just like the rising of dawn. So when dawn comes, sun is there, but you don't perceive it so much. So Krishna is there, but you don't experience Krishna fully. He's covered, so to speak. Not that he is covered, but we are covered. And so our perception of him is covered. Our experience, so therefore the not there would have no effect whatsoever. So Krishna is there, but the full force of that experience isn't there because of the heart is covered by ignorance and anarthas. Understand? Ignorance has four divisions. All these categories have four divisions. Ignorance and anarthas are of three types, division. Bhaktivinoda Thakur described. One division is called asat chishna, which means thirst for the temporary. Category of anarthas is called weakness of heart. Another category is called aparad. Understand? Where are the cartels? I need some cartels for ringing. Yes, bring them. I need cartels. Understand? So anarthas have three categories. Three categories of anarthas: asat chishna, weakness of heart, hridaya daubalyam, and aparad, offenses. And ignorance is there also, avidya. These four categories. Tattva Brahma. Tattva Brahma means ignorance of truth, spiritual truth. Vastu Tattva, understand? So each of these have four. Maybe I don't go into that right now. I'm interested to know or not. 4 times 4 is 16. So you want to know what the things are? I don't even remember all of them, I think. Tattva Brahma has four divisions. Ignorance of self. Ignorance of the swarup of the self, ignorance of the swarup of Krishna, ignorance of the process of sadhana and sadhya, ignorance of the position of prema or something. I forget the fourth one actually. Maybe it. I have to double check that. Weakness of heart has four categories. Pratishta, that's the main one, the heart one, weakness of heart. Fault finding and enviousness. Attachment to objects not related to Krishna. And then, what is the other category? Asat Krishna has four categories also. Attachment to things in this world. Attachment to sense gratification. So things in this world. Attachment to the attainment of swarga. The mukti. The other one? I don't remember. Has four categories also. I don't remember. Aparad has four categories also. Nam Aparad. Seva Aparad means Aparad to the deity. Vaishnava aparad, jiva aparad, offenses to ordinary living entities. So anyway, and that's why our hearts are covered by these clouds and mist of anarthas and ignorance respectively. We do not experience the full holy name of Krishna. And yet, even though that is the case, this namabha still has so much power, so much influence. So that is what is mentioned here. So are there any questions about any of these things so far? Nambas shudanam. Krishna's attached to his name. He has fondness for his name. That's an interesting point, isn't it? Jiva Goswami. I was just reading this morning. So we're going to look at this purport a little bit, this commentary of Vishwanatha Chaitanya Thakur. I don't think we're going to get through all of it, but some interesting things are brought up in light of some previous question also. I know, which is very hard, conditioned as we are, but we should at least put forth some effort. So it says here, commentary on 9:10, Tavishamati. The name of the Lord may destroy sins, but how can Namabhas be the atonement for thousands of grave sins, which cannot be destroyed by thousands of 12-year vows? Stena means a gold thief. Chanting is the best atonement since it destroys the root of sin. Understand? That was the defect in Karma Marg and Gyanamarg. Marg. It couldn't destroy the root of sin. What is the root of sin? What is the root of sin? Ignorance. A 12-year ignorance is the root of sin. Understand? Ignorance means to ignore. Understand? Let's call it ignorance. To ignore. A 12-year vow of atonement, though it destroys the effects of sin, cannot destroy the root of sin. That is not the only result, because from chanting the name of the Lord's mind dwells on that person who chants, Tat Vishayamati. The Lord thinks, this person belongs to me, I will always protect him. This is Sridhar Swami's meaning of the phrase. Understand? So what's the 2 points about the holy name here? 2 points. Point number one, It destroys a root of sin, so naturally destroys sin. The other point, the Lord thinks of that person. So that's the real point. And the how you say, concomitant, less important point is the root of sin is destroyed. Understand so far? Don't worry, it's going to get more confusing. The servants of Vishnu said, hearing his name being chanted and remembering Ajamila, the Lord ordered us to bring Ajamila, who was chanting his name. Vishnu said that. Then how much more the Lord will remember a person who chants the Lord's name with a service attitude? Exclamation mark. So that's the Kaimutanaya point that we already told. This is the implication. To show this to the servants of Yama, the servants of Vishnu said that Ajamila's chanting at the time of death had destroyed all his sins. But actually, from the first time that Ajamila called his son Narayana, out of all the times he called, all his sins have been destroyed. So what does it speak of all the times he said the name of Narayana? From the very first time he said that was already covered. Destruction, atonement for sins. The rest of the chanting after that produced bhakti. So just take note of that, because this is going to become an essential point in the future of this commentary. Got it? Yeah. Yes. It destroys sins and gradually you rise to the state of, you develop bhakti by chanting. Chanting is itself bhakti, yeah. Yeah. So this is coming up. So far, so good. Aren't you here staying on in and get this nectar information that we would ordinarily not ever hear about? The past tense of ya vyajahara. That comes in this verse, vyajahara. He chanted in verse 7 also indicates that from the first time he chanted the name, all sins have been destroyed. The word vivasha in that verse means spontaneously out of affection for his child. So he's quoting this verse. So what to speak of? Already, because he was always constantly chanting the name of his son with affection, spontaneously, atonement was already wiped out. And the rest of the chanting he did after that, he developed bhakti. So 2 points made here. So far, so good. Take note of these points. These are good points. That's a nam tattva. Continuing on, but after chanting repeatedly, now the question comes up, but after chanting repeatedly, he committed repeated sins, such as going to the prostitute and drinking wine. So how is it that, proclivity, where is that, how is it that ignorance was dispelled? In order to destroy those sins, he had to chant at the end of his life, since there was again appearance of sin. Understand the doubt? So, okay, fine. He cleared out all doubts from chanting in the beginning. But then after that, he took up some more sinful activity. So then at the end of his life, he had to chant again in order to clear that out. That's what they're saying. So then Vishwanathacharya Thakur says, this cannot be said because it will be said later, Vaikuntha nama grahanam asheshagha haram. Chanting the Lord's name destroys unlimited sins. This is in 6:2:16 coming up. The following verses also show that chanting releases one from the bondage of samsara. So he quotes a few verses here. I won't say the Sanskrit. This is first verse. All sins in the present, past, and future are quickly destroyed by chanting the name of Govinda, which is like fire. So past, present, and future. Next verse, by hearing one of your names once, even the outcast is delivered from the material world. Another verse, such power is not surprising from persons who have conquered the six senses, but the dust from the lotus feet of the Lord, since even an outcast becomes immediately free of bondage of karma by chanting the Lord's name even once. So understand the point being made here. What's the point being made? Any of us could have guessed that without even hearing the class like you just did. What is the point being made here? What is the question? What was the question that was asked? After he first chanted. So then what are they saying? What's the answer? Understand? This is a point. Two points. Take note. Take note. Don't just stand there starry-eyed. Take note of these Namchatra points. That was the second point. The first point is a question. The question was, what was the question? Sean, what was the question? Yes. What was the answer? Yes. Everyone got it? Yeah. No, that's not what was said. The duplicitous. Yeah, so hold that question. Remember that question. We're going to go through this commentary and see if it's answered, because I think it will be answered, actually. So far, so good, though. We're just going to try to get these points first, then we'll ask all these nuanced questions. First, let's just get some solid ground to walk on. Continuing on. Because there is no mention of a particular time span for the effect of Namabhas to occur, it should be understood that by the first chanting, there is destruction of all sins, all desires, and as well, ignorance, which is the root cause, because only then sin will not reappear in the future. So, that doesn't make sense. Because it was saying that he did sin after that. So how did the root, which is ignorance, go away if by that chanting? Yeah, it's a long sentence. Because it looks like a paragraph, in fact. Because there is no mention of a particular time span for the effect of Namabhas to occur, it should be understood that by the first chanting, all sins, all desires, and as well, ignorance, which is the root cause, because only then sin will not reappear in the future. So then question. Why then did sin not leave Ajmil after chanting the first time? Good question. How could he continue to be attached to the woman and commit sin for so long if all his sins have been destroyed? Interesting question. Good question. Now, Madhudas are asking, well, how do you, because you said we were wrong, but it looks like there's some inconsistency in your philosophy too. So then the commentary continues. Like the karmas of the Jiva Mukta, which remain for some time simply as impressions, Ajamil's sins, which lasted till his death, were like the bites of a toothless snake and did not generate results. Understand? Don't worry, it's going to get even more bewildering. So this is the first point. Just like when a person wakes up from a nightmare, the impression of the nightmare may be there, but his life is not... Yeah, it's just a little... So it's in a similar way, just as the Jiva Mukta is like that. When you attain bhava, you become Jiva Mukta. And that time, this is described in Madhurya Kandamani like this. It's like waking up from a bad dream. So the impression is there, but it doesn't affect you. So Jiva Mukta, it will be seen that his karma still seem to be acting, but it has no effect on him anymore. Just like waking up from a bad dream. So similarly, the sins that he continued to commit thereafter didn't generate any reactions, just like a Jiva Mukta's impressions. That was the first point. Second point, moreover, the Lord himself will cause continuance of sin in order that other philosophies, karma kanda, etc., will not be completely uprooted, since no one will have any faith at all in those processes. Everyone would just give up everything. The bhakti also, so that's the point. So therefore, in order to keep some faith in those things, Krishna may Oh, certain things to continue on in the person's life for his own reasons. 2 points. That's actually the answer to the question. 2 points. Understand? I know this is just shaking up our whole sense of what we understand to be pure and everything. It's causing disturbance to our conceptions of purity, huh? Anyway, that's coming up. We're just going to try to first understand this, and then we'll get into nuanced questions if there are any afterwards. So if one were to explain the scriptural statements concerning the powers of the name to be exaggerated, this is all an exaggeration. You know? You may be thinking like that right now also. This is hyperbole. So that will chant sincerely. You're thinking like that, and then one will be committing offense. Tvatartha Vado Harinam Nikalpanam. It is an offense to interpret the name or think its powers are exaggeration. So already this pastime is putting us on the verge of offense. Hearing all these things. Be careful. So then he quotes a few verses. Namashraya Katachit Syat Taratyeva Sanamata. One who takes shelter of the name at any time crosses material life by the name. One falls to hell from offense to the name of the Lord, who is the friend of all beings. That's one quote. Another quote. Those most sinful of men who interpret the name of the Lord fall to hell. Another quote. That person who, even after hearing about the wonderful results of chanting the Lord's name, refuses to develop sincere faith in the name, and on the contrary, interprets the name, is hurled by me into the deep gloom of material nescience after being dragged through excruciating suffering. Understand? if you hear the glories of the name, don't take the name also, and you also interpret it, oh, this is hyperbole, then first you get dragged, then you're hurled into the deep gloom of material nescience. There's more nectar coming. Next, another quote. Persons who interpret the shrutis, which wonderfully glorify the Lord's name, stay in hell forever. Nothing to increase, better not. Okay, you want to say something about this? Well, anyway, the main point he's bringing out is if you interpret the name, then that's an offense. So he's just demonstrating that point from several verses. Well, you don't need knowledge to interpret. In fact, people who don't have knowledge interpret. So his commentary continues here. Maybe I won't read all of it because I don't know if you can tolerate. See how I'm turning so many pages? This is the whole thing. Many pages are left. But we'll go on a little bit longer. So thus, from the scriptures like Padma Purana and Katyayana Samhita, there are thousands of statements showing fall down from interpreting the name. Parshit has just said, quote, after withdrawing from sin, one commits sin again. I think atonement is useless like an elephant bathing. Parshit Maharaj, has condemned atonements because of seeing that the tendency for sin remains. But he does not criticize bhakti, though seeing sinful tendencies in some of the devotees. You know, this seems like a double standard. The karmis, he said, that was just like elephant bath. And then same thing devotees may look like they're doing, but he doesn't criticize that. The double standard, our logic mind says, double contradiction, hypocrisy, like that. Commentary continues. And Ajamil, a sinner, attained Vaikuntha by the strength of Namabhas. But Smartas and others, though knowing scriptures and though chanting the name, continue their existence in frightful samsara because of the offense of interpreting the name. So now he's trying to evolve a different point. So the point is that why is it seen that sin continues on? In the life of certain devotees, it may be seen in that way. So he gave two answers. What was the two answers? You recall two answers. The impressions was one, and the other one, to keep the faith in those people who follow lesser Shastric standards. So then he says, if you think this is hyperbole, then you're in dangerous situation. You have to go down if you think it's a hyperbole into material life. So what Parashimara says of the karma margis, those who follow the path of karma mark, that they atone and then again take up sinful life, it is just like elephant bath. But the bhaktas, it may be seen that some of them also do like that, but you have not criticized them in the same way. So this seems like double standard. So he's saying here, Ajamil, he chanted the name and got Vaikuntha. But these smarter brahmanas, they also chant the name because their procedures require them to do so. But they go down. Why is this? This is double standard. It's unfair. Ajamil, he does sinful life, but he chants the name. He gets Vaikuntha. These other fellows, they also chant the name, but they interpret the name also. They go down. So the argument being presented here, this looks like some double standards are going on here that seem unfair. So this is about to be addressed. Yeah. Sure. Yes and no. Yes and no. He's looking for our affection, undoubtedly. So yes and no. But I'm not gonna go into that deeply right now because I'm gonna get a little bit more through this beautiful commentary of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. So how we understand this double standard that seems to be there? So answer. But one should not worry that everyone will immediately become liberated on seeing such power in the name. Though sin is completely uprooted just by chanting the name even once, in most cases the name shows its fruits to the world after some time, just as fruit trees bear fruit after some time only, not immediately. And in some cases the name does not show its effects at all, in order that the material scriptures, such as Karmakanda, are not completely destroyed by loss of faith in them. Then, as a person who has chanted without offense to the Lord's abode, this conclusion should be understood. So he's answering the first part about Ajamil's committing sins, continuing to commit sin, and getting Vaikuntha. So the answer he's giving is that it's just like a tree bearing fruit. The fruit doesn't come immediately. It generally comes over time. So also when one chants Namabhas, for the most part, it will be seen that the effect of that Namabhas is not happening immediately. And in certain cases, it may not happen at all because Krishna wants to protect the faith of those who have faith in lesser, let's say, Shastric standards and so on. So he answers that half of the question. What about the smartest and all those persons, though? So it has to be answered. So far, so good. The smarters, they also chant the name, but they interpret. They interpret. I accept that because of offense to the name, those who interpret the name as an exaggeration go to hell. Yes. However, if chanting the name destroys all sins, all karmis, gyanis, yogis, and bhaktas should not go to hell for illicit sex or violence, if that is true. Because they are all chanting the names. Karmis chant the names, gyanis chant the names, yogis chant the names, bhaktas also chant the names. So if it frees you from all sins, then no one should go to hell. And if the name does not destroy all sin, all these people and even go to hell to suffer the results of their sin, even if they chant. So does the name destroy it or not destroy it? That's the question. Because if it does destroy it, then no one should go to hell because everyone would be chanting the name in the Vedic culture. Karmis, gyanis, everyone chant. And if it doesn't destroy the sins, then everyone should go to hell, including the bhakta who's also committing sin. So does the name destroy it? Does it not destroy it? That question is being asked. Understand? So answer. This is a nice little analogy here. Though a merchant protects a person under his shelter, according to the degree that the person surrenders to him, the merchant becomes displeased with him and does not give protection to that surrendered person. But one should not think that the merchant is incapable of protecting him. And according to the degree that the offense diminishes, the merchant begins to show mercy to that person. When the offense is completely gone, the merchant shows all mercy. The name is similar. Those who take shelter of Bhakti Devi, representing the name, secondary practice in order to bring out results of karma ajnan are called karmis or gyanis, even though bhakti is present in the minor position. They are thus not called Vaishnavas. By their natures, they are offenders to the name aspect. For it is said, dharma vrata tyaga hutadi sarva shubhakriya samyam api pramada. This is the eighth offense. The eighth offense is to consider the name equivalent to dharma, vrata, sacrifices, and other karmakanda rites. If considering the name to be equal to karma and dharma is an offense, then the offense is much more if one considers the name secondary to karma and dharma, being a mere limb of karma or dharma. Understand the answer? This is a nice answer. No one understanding. Confused. So first he gives the example of a merchant. If someone surrenders to a merchant, then that merchant gives him all protection. Understand? But if he offends the merchant will release some of that shelter. You know, if it's very offensive, then the merchant may completely dismiss him. But that doesn't mean he doesn't have the capacity to give shelter. Understand? And to the degree the offense is diminished, to that degree, the merchant will, again, give mercy. And when offense is completely gone, then he gives all mercy. Understand so far? Well, the name is a person after all. It's not a mechanism. So it's an individual. So far, so good? So then he's saying here that the smartas, the karmis and gyanis, they are offensive by their nature. Because in order to make their processes successful, they accept bhakti as a secondary limb to their processes. So that means they also chant the name, but in a secondary function, in order so that they can get the fruit of karma and gyan. Because if they don't accept some aspect of bhakti, their processes don't bear any fruit, according to the shastras. So they accept those processes, and the processes of bhakti in a secondary fashion. That's offensive by nature. Because shastras say, if you consider the name to be equal to dharma, vrata, tyag, and all these things, then that is offense. So how much more is the offense if you consider secondary? If you consider it to be equal, that is offense. If you consider it secondary, that's even more offense. So as a result of offenses, they're not receiving the full protection of the holy name. That's the point. But Ajamil didn't commit that offense. He was just chanting because he had affection for his son. He wasn't thinking about any of these things. Whereas the smartas and karmaganis and so on, they think in this way. So they're offensive. So because of offense, they're not getting the full shelter of the name. Understand? Not nuanced questions. If just questions for understanding what we're trying to build some ground here. Because you need to first build a ground to walk on before you can get into nuances, you know. Start getting into nuances and like real deep discussions, but you have no ground to stand on. That's not very useful. So first, there should be solid sambandhigyan. Then you can get into all the bewildered. I'll read a little bit more. I know everyone wants to be released from the bondage of this discussion. And it's 8:38 after all. But a little bit more. So far, so good. I hope you're taking notes of these things or you got really sharp memory, because this is important stuff, the information. And it also changed our outlook on living entities, understanding this section of Bhagavatam. Because we tend to be real judgy because of our pure standards. We tend to be a little judgy, which is natural. It's not that we should drop purity or the, at least, anyway, most of us are not even at the standard. We should drop the purity of the standard. But the tendency is that when you live by a high ideal, you become a little puffed up. That influences the mode of goodness. You become a little puffed up. I am following so purely and so on. But if you understand these first three chapters of Bhagavatam, that tendency to be judgy will reduce in the heart. And therefore, the tendency to commit aparad towards jivas and those will also diminish. Understand? So these sections, that's why hearing shastra is so important, along with the chanting. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is told that hearing Hari Katha is a sarva shakti of Harinam. Understand? Just like Srimati Radharani is a sarva shakti of Krishna, and only by her grace can you have Krishna. So similarly, hearing Hari Katha is a sarva shakti of Harinam. And therefore, only by the grace of Hari Katha can you chant the name. And this is part of the hearing. You learn all these things. It changes your outlook of the name. It changes your outlook on jivas. It changes your outlook on the Lord himself. And that way you can chant the name purely and get Krishna. Otherwise, it's not possible. So hearing is as important as chanting Harinam for sadhakas. Otherwise, they can't come to pure chanting, although they will get the effect of whatever chanting they're doing. But it's just being glorified here. So we read a little bit more, this nectar information from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. I know everyone's hair is standing on end, the excitement information, isn't it? So though recognizing that they have offended her, the Karmis and the Gyanis, by taking her in a secondary fashion, out of compassion, Bhakti Devi thinks, karma yoga and these other processes should not be fruitless. How kind of her. Since they have accepted a small portion of her shelter. Thus, though she is a limb of karma, she gives the results of karma again in other processes without instruction. Similarly, when bhakti is a limb of atonement, she destroys the sins in those persons practicing atonements. It is not otherwise. And those who do not perform atonements go to hell to experience the results of their sins. However, Vaishnavas do not need to perform atonements. Furthermore, if those persons commit other offenses, such as interpreting the name or committing offenses to the devotee, and then perform dharma and other processes, bhakti no results for their efforts, even though she is still a limb of dharma and other processes. So as long as they don't commit, basically here it's saying nam aparad, although by nature their mentality is an offensive one, because they are only taking her in a secondary function, directly, then she will give them the fruits of their you know, trifle, frivolous little desires. Okay, take it, you know, because they have taken some little shelter of me. But if they directly make offense by interpreting the name or offense, then she will not give them the benefits of their processes. Everything is personal in this world, material and spiritual. Everything is personal. Bhakti is personal. So if you, of nature, all right, give you some benefit because you've taken a little shelter. But if you commit offense to Vaishnavas, you interpret the name like that, you commit offenses, then nothing, you get nothing. A quote is given from the Pavan Purana. O Brahmana, offenses to the name destroys man's pious actions and lead them to material worlds. That's from the Pavan Purana. So if those persons become free from offense and dedicate themselves to chanting or other bhakti processes, they will get results for their karma and gyan in proportion to the destruction of offense. So that was the merchant example. Remember the merchant example? So offenses and do bhakti processes in a secondary fashion because that's their mentality as such, then they will get the fruit of their processes a proportion to the degree of destruction of their offenses that they've made. Understand? However, with complete destruction of offense by association with devotees, that means only association can completely offenseless. Attainment of the results of chanting is certain by the direct mercy of Bhakti Devi. Understand? A little bit more. Y'all, here's what's telling you on there, right? Yeah. No, they can get free from their offenses by those processes of bhakti, and as their offenses are gradually destroyed, it means they have to stop their offenses, stop interpreting names, stop offending Vaishnavas, etc. And as they take those processes of bhakti, those processes themselves will purify them of offense. And then they'll get the results of their little, you know, silly desires, which we all have. But then when offenses are completely destroyed, that comes by association with devotees of Bhakti Devi. So only by association with devotees can offenses be completely destroyed. That's the point. Okay, yeah.
Was the question I asked earlier ever addressed in that dissertation when we were reading? Because I was trying to find that answer from earlier when I'd asked, like, someone who chants maybe out of love and affection or that are on a lower level, they're not as pure, but yet they still chant with some type of affection.
See, the thing is, if you chant, if you do sinful activities on the strength of chanting, or you chant to counteract sinful activity, that is an offense. So then you do not get the mercy because you commit offenses. So someone may be, by the strength of their conditioned life, engaged in some unfavorable devotional, unfavorable to devotional service activity, like illicit sex, intoxication, and so on. But he shall not think that I'll counteract all this sinful activity I've just done by chanting the holy name of Krishna. Or I can do it and then I'll just chant and purify in the end. If he shall think like that, then he'll be devoid of the mercy. And if he's just doing that on the being helpless on account of identification with matter being very strong, or in certain special cases, allow such things to go on in the life of a devotee, he can still achieve the goal of life, although he will do so slowly. Because the difference between Namabhas chanting and Shuddhanam chanting is Namabhas of offenses, anarthas, and ignorance makes the process slow, like going through a tar pit, you know. And similarly, when you chant purely, or conversely, when you chant purely, then the process happens very efficiently, very quickly. So if someone is sinning, so 2 points, if someone's sinning on the strength of chanting, or chanting to counteract sinning, that's offensive. So then he loses ground in spiritual life. If someone happens to be engaged in sinful activity on account of his circumstances in life, kind of overwhelmed and so on, he still gets the effect of his chanting, the Namabhas chanting that he does, although it may produce fruit only gradually. Just as when you plant a seed, the fruit doesn't come immediately, it comes gradually. And therefore, he receives effects of that sort of chanting in the form of getting some ground in spiritual life only gradually, slowly. It happens slowly. So this is not, in other words, this section is not a glorification of sinning and grinning, which is the fullness, you know, sin and grin, you know. You at the party and you're, someone's like a Christian, another one is a Muslim. And they're both at the bar chanting. And then one of them says, well, I'm a Muslim. Oh, well, you're going to hell. You know, and they still dancing. And then they'll say, well, no, well, you're going to hell, you know. Well, why am I going to hell? Well, because you're not a Christian. But you're doing the same thing I'm doing. Yeah, that, you know, I'm lucky because I got the right guy, you know. And they're still saying, it's just not a glorification of sinning and grinning. But it is saying here, it can happen. Just like our Raksa Prabhu always tells us all the time, that he was engaged in so many unfavorable devotional service activities. But he always used to chant. But he said, I never chanted to counteract anything. I used to chant just because I needed to chant. Because I just needed to be, I needed some sanity, you know. And I knew that Krishna was God. And I knew one day I would fully take shelter of him. I just wasn't able to do it right now. So he said, I used to chant just to chant. Not because I was thinking I want to counteract. Because he said, I knew that was a sin. He said, I knew that was an offense. He had heard from the devotees. So he said, I knew that was an offense. You know how Raja Guru talks. I knew that was an offense. So therefore, I never wanted to counteract anything. But I used to chant just because I needed to chant. So also it's the case of Ajramil. So in such a case, one gets the result of such practice. It is a type of practice. Maybe not the best form of it. But it is a type of practice. They get the result of that practice slowly. And that result means they get some ground in spiritual life, some solidarity in their spiritual life. But it happens gradually. Just as if you plant the seed of a fruit, you get the fruit gradually, not immediately. Krishna may sometimes allow such things to go on also. It means that somehow the person is just the momentum, perhaps he's devoid of association, other factors may be there, by which he's continuing on in such affairs. Now, when you have to manage a place, like this is an ashram, it's a community, or you have a household, you have to set standards. Otherwise, on the strength of these things, people will be sinning and grinning. You know? Anyway, don't judge me, Prabhu. You can't see my consciousness. Yes, I can. Get out. You know, we're in the mode of ignorance and telling people that don't judge me because I have pure intentions. I'm overwhelmed by my conditioned nature, so I have to have a drink every now and then. So when you're trying to maintain spiritual community, we have a responsibility to each other, and so therefore standards have to be set and play in such a community. That's the way it works. That's the way a community can work. You have to set standards. People have to follow those standards. But on a personal level, such understandings would make you less judgy. Maybe be able to see past a person's helpless situation. They may be engaged in various smoking marijuana, doing this, that, and the other. And you will be able to see through all of that because they're chanting the holy name of Krishna. You will be able to take that good quality that they're chanting. And perhaps if you're broad enough, you'll be able to broad enough in your vision and your own spirituality, you'll impart to them so they can come over that hurdle. But it'll make you less judgy, and where you shall think, oh, ew, he's looking at what he's doing, you know, he's impure. Which tends to sometimes appear in our mind because of being empowered actually to follow some few things, like the four regular principles and so on. Does that answer your question? So it's a few aspects there.
I was thinking that this understanding definitely will help us not judge, you know, devotees who are trying to overcome their, you know, unfavorable activities and also chanting at the same time. But then what about in the case of, like, say, for example, I just heard about the Guruvayur temple. It's a Krishna temple, but they're all trained by Shankaracharya. They chant Hare Krishna. They even sing Gita Govinda to the deities when they take prasad. But the whole mentality is, by doing all this, I'll become liberated, I'll merge. So, yeah, so it's like, how do you... Then the judging mentality might come out. Like, come on, you're taking...
No, I'm not judging. We're not going over to their ashrams, pointing fingers at them, nor are we bringing them up much in our class. But objectively speaking, you go down. Krishna says. There's no judgment there. Krishna says, you go down. That's it. The devotee can say like that very detached. You're Muda. Krishna says. And nothing like big deal. I'm not like... making fun of you or anything. I'm just saying, Muda is there. A devotee, I mean, a real devotee can do like that. Prabhupada says in one lecture, I love this lecture, I gotta find it. It's a lecture of the Prabhupada's quoting, I think it's the fourth chapter of Gita. I have to find this lecture. But he's saying, if you're a real Vaishnava, you will tell them directly that they're fools and rascals. Prabhupada was giving some lecture like this. He said, because you're not Krishna conscious, you cannot tell them, because you're also a fool and rascal. So therefore, you're not telling, because you are also a fool and rascal, you don't want to say. But if you're really Krishna conscious, you can tell you're a fool and rascal. But that means that you will tell in a detached sort of way, as Krishna does in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is not a very judgy person. He says if you worship in the mode of goodness, you get a situation accordingly. Yanti deva vratta deva. If you worship in passion, if you worship in ignorance, if you worship me, you come to me. Those who worship the deva to antava tu palam te sham ta bhavati apamedasam. Devo, what is that? Yanti deva yajo yanti, I forget the verse. Tepi, anyway, I forget. Antava tu palam te sham. So those who worship the devatas, ta bhavati apamedasam, they have little intelligence, very little. Why? Because their fruits are ephemeral. So that is the womb that gives birth to suffering. The son of suffering. But he's not saying it in turn. It's like saying, if you touch fire, you're going to get burned. It's not a judgment. It's just saying, this is what it is. So persons who think like this, Krishna's an ordinary person, a Muda. Those who think that there is no God, lowest of mankind. Those who think they are God, knowledge stolen by illusion. This, Asuram Bhava Masrita, all demons Bhava. demoniac Baba. Nature is demoniac. It's not a judgment. It's not a judgment. He's just saying this is what it is, and it helps you to discriminate. And so if we're Krishna conscious, we can also do like Krishna. Someone says, well, how can you say if there is really a God? How do you know God, Krishna isn't just the result of anthropomorphism? We say you are a rascal. Foolish. Foolish. Because Krishna says, the person who says like this, muda. So they say this is foolishness. We may not say you are foolish, you know, that would be, we might try to be more polite about it. But in a roundabout way, come to the point. You know, that's foolishness. Because, and then you can try to explain it to them philosophically why it is the case. But we should be able to say we're Krishna conscious. It's not judgy. And again, the judginess is not always in what you say, which is really just an expression of the judgment. The judgment is an internal thing that happens due to an uncontrolled mind. So by mind getting purified by the Bhagavatam, chanting holy name, then that goes, that diminishes. You know, our ability to keep our mind from going into that atmosphere diminishes. You can just see things for what they are in a detached spirit. Just like it says, Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmaniga Vihastini Shunin Chaiva Sopagisha Pandita Samadarshana. That the person, pundit, by virtue of truism, Vidya Vinaya Sampane, he sees what it equals. But what is that equal vision? He sees that living entities have certain bodies according to their karmas. And he sees the living entity is all one on the platform of consciousness. Just as we're, although we may have different vehicles that we drive, on the platform of humanity, we're all one, we're all humans. But you can see that everyone's a conscious entity, and no one is better or worse than anyone else. But according to their karmas, they have different situations. So he sees with equal eye. So by virtue, so then similarly, by virtue of hearing these vibrations of Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, etc., then we also develop that sort of vision. You won't be judgmental or anything, but you will be able to discriminate. You know, not being judgmental doesn't mean not being able to discriminate. Not being able to discriminate means no intelligence. And spiritual life is for persons with fixed intelligence. In fact, Krishna describes the person in samadhi as sthita prajna, which means he's basically his intelligence is fixed. That is what it means to be self-realized, a very fixed intelligence, at least on the most fundamental. We're going to have to stop for now because it's already 9 o'clock. I guess we'll have to continue the nectar tomorrow. I hope you got all the points, so because I will need to see them myself. I've read this purport so many more and more it starts to make sense, and it comes out more when you are in association of devotees and questions and answers come. Some greater clarity starts to come up. Good stuff, though. Good stuff. Got the stuff. It's better than intoxication. Just knowledge. All right. We'll stop for now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Huh? Yeah, I told myself I won't go past 9. That's when breakfast comes. No,
Shawnee G.
Turn the microphone off. Turn the microphone off. Turn the microphone off.